You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to a special episode of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are thrilled to be joined once again by third Pelton brother extraordinaire Ben Baldwin of RBSDM.com. We had you on, obviously, traditionally to preview the offseason, but a lot has happened since we last talked, Ben.
A lot has happened, and now, as you're listening to this, football's probably back tomorrow or even maybe today, depending on how soon you get to this episode. So I'm very excited. Lots of fantasy football drafts, lots of games to look forward to.
Wow, that didn't occur to me. Like, yeah, that is tomorrow, because I'm still thinking of it as a Monday after Labor Day, as opposed to it's actually Tuesday. Where are you
Some
at?
Of us who pay attention to college have had football for the last 2 weeks. Thank you.
There's definitely been a version of, I mean, I went to a game. I enjoyed the meetup game very much. We'll talk about that on the regular weekly pod coming out late this week on Thursday. But today our focus is strictly on the Seahawks. Ben, let's take a temperature check. Where are you at on the Seahawks right now, going into the 2024 season, both for this season and kind of big picture, I guess?
Yeah, in the short term, I'm kind of excited just to see, like, it's something different. They have a new coaching staff. It just, like, when every season starts, the NFL offseason is so long that, like, wow, we haven't seen the Seahawks play in a really long time. It's going to be different. I'm really excited about this. And their first two games are against teams that should be really bad. So I think there's the chance to start off on a good note. I'm going to go to the game in New England to see them play the Patriots. So I hope they can beat the Patriots. But in terms of, like, the big picture in their season, I'm a little bit nervous about the offensive line and Abe Lucas situation. And in contrast to a year ago, when we thought, oh, they have these two bookend tackles that are going to last for the next decade, and, like, there's really not really any glaring holes anywhere on the offense. They have a proven offensive leader, and this should be a really good offense. And I think I said their ceiling was like a top three offense or something like that. And that didn't work out. Abe Lucas got hurt. Their offense wasn't that good. And now, given all the turnover on the defense and how bad the defense was last year, I'm like, as we'll get to, I think their over under is like 7.5 wins. And I think that seems reasonable. I think they could be better than that, but it's hard to see that unless they have some kind of miracle on their offensive line, it's hard to see them being like a contender in the NFC.
It feels like there was a lot of hype building during the preseason, particularly people watching, you know, Geno Smith's one series in the preseason that was 5 passes. Love to see that. Ryan Grubb's been talking up the running game like, no, we just ran a lot at UW because of the fact, passed a lot at UW because we were so good at it. Like, no, the guy likes to pass too. Also, passing is very efficient. Passing is, it's like the Scott Service. He's too into analytics. Ryan Grubb, the criticism is he's too into passing, but the Abe Lucas news and the fact that, you know, he's starting the season on the PUP list, and John Schneider's very pessimistic assessment of, you know, well, I do think he'll play this season, but we're trying to do right by Abe Lucas and the long-term future of the Seahawks, all somewhat discouraging signs after what had been, I think, a very positive month of preseason for the Seahawks. All right. Well, before I guess next up, did we learn anything from the preseason?
I'm the wrong person to ask because I go on vacation for 3 weeks every August. So I have absolutely no idea what happened in the preseason.
Tristan effectively went on vacation during the preseason.
Every preseason. I don't think you could say that we learned anything in the preseason. Well, how about this? I think the thing that we learned in the preseason was the pre-snap motion rate for Ryan Grubb and the Seahawks offense was extraordinarily high. And that's something that if they were doing it in the preseason, it means that they're almost certainly going to be doing it in the regular season. And if we learn anything, I would say it's that, because it's not about an individual. It's not about success rate or anything like that. It is a structural thing that the Seahawks are looking to do on offense, period.
And it's something that Ryan Grubb did at the University of Washington to great success. It was, you know, Like it's not necessarily like not a part of the Jedfish offense, but it wasn't as noticeable, particularly kind of the late motion that Ryan Grubb particularly liked, you know, to identify a scheme or isolate a matchup, that sort of thing, that sometimes led to some play clock issues, but in general was a big part of the Huskies' success the last few seasons. And it'll be interesting because that's not quite the same at the NFL game, where so much more of the responsibility is with the quarterback than it is with the offensive coordinator. But he does have a veteran quarterback to execute that in Geno Smith.
Yeah, very curious to see what the offense looks like. Hopefully it'll be a repeat of the Colts game where Kevin and I saw each other halftime that has probably been referenced a good 15 times on this podcast. And hopefully we'll be just as excited after one half of football as we were.
D. Eskridge, the future of the Seahawks offense.
I'm considering meeting up with someone at halftime of the Bears' first game. And if the Shane Waldron offense is cooking in Chicago, just running that one back in addition to Ryan Grubb, hopefully doing it in Seattle. I mean, taking it above Grubb, where are we at on Mike McDonald? Has anything that's happened in the, I guess, 7.5 months since we last talked? We knew at that point the coordinators, and by the way, fun game because I was reviewing the last podcast recap. Tristan, can you name the Seahawks defensive coordinator?
Currently?
Yeah.
Can you?
I don't know if I could have before I saw it in the post notes.
Ben, nope.
Aiden Durnay, former Dallas Cowboys defensive line coach.
I do remember that now that you say that.
Now that I hear it, it sounds familiar. Yes, one of the more anonymous.
I know that, right, Brendan Carroll is the Huskies offensive coordinator, but it's like Jed Fish is the offensive coordinator.
Correct. He's the play caller. I think, is Mike McDonald going to call plays for the defense? I believe so, right?
I think so.
Yeah. Where are we at on Mike McDonald? Have we learned anything about him in the past 7.5 months?
I think it's pretty hard to learn a lot about most coaches, probably, and especially defensive coaches, unless we actually see what their teams look like when they're actually playing real games. So I'm cautiously optimistic that some of the defensive results that he brings over from Baltimore will translate, but I'm also probably relatively on one side in terms of like the players versus coaching on the defensive side of the ball in terms of how important coaching actually is. So I think I could probably be talked into the coaching being bad enough last year that some of the poor defensive results were because of that. So even if it's just going from bad to average, not saying that we know he's average, but maybe there'd be some improvement there, and maybe the defense would have improved anyway if they hadn't made a coaching change, just because it's hard to be bad, really bad on defense year over year over year. So I would think, despite how little we probably know about him, we should probably expect the defense to be not as bad as it was last year, even though they did lose a lot of defensive starters.
Right. I mean, I think even if, you know, as soon as Pete Carroll was fired, the odds were that the Seahawks defense was going to be much better than it was the last few seasons, and probably closer to average. Which does not speak to great to our guy, Pete Carroll, defensive coach at the end of his career. But Legion of Boom, amazing.
The things that we know about Mike McDonald, it's something that cannot be judged, maybe even necessarily throughout a season, right? The quality of a coach is something that takes multiple years to judge. There's an instant response, and then there's a long term of whether we know whether Mike McDonald will be a good coach for the foreseeable future or not. But I think the things that we know right now are that he's wanting to get some of his guys on defense, has done it, players who sort of fit his scheme, and the openness to go out and hire an offensive coordinator like Ryan Grubb and basically turn over that side of the ball, as far as we can tell. I think that Mike McDonald is going to have a say on offense, but Ryan Grubb wasn't coming over to be micromanaged a massive amount. And so I think it actually comes back to the point that we talked about the motion, the pre-snap motion on offense. Individual success at a preseason level is probably not a thing worth being discussed in 2024. But the things that are worth being discussed are kind of the overall things that they're doing. Mike McDonald seems to have this defense be ready to fight, ready to hit, play fast, play aggressive. We don't know exactly what that's going to translate to with this like particular personnel. I'm feeling very good about it right now. And I think the other piece is for a head coach in 2024 is just having a level of adaptability to what's going on and what the game looks like. And right now that feels like something that Mike McDonald has. So I am so extraordinarily hyped for the Seahawks season and for Mike McDonald overall. And I actually kind of like the idea of having, you know, like there obviously were other coaches who are out there, more offensive minded coaches who the Seahawks could have hired, but I am so freaking hyped for Mike McDonald right now and this Seahawks team and what they need heading into this season and long term that I think the defense would have to be pretty bad. Something would have to be pretty bad, fourth down decision, something like that, to really sway me on Mike McDonald at this point. And so far, he's passed every single test that there is. It's before a game has happened, though, so I don't think we should even really judge anything that much. Because there were times, I remember Dan Campbell, right, that first press conference, he was kind of a laughing stock.
Yep.
After that. People were like, wow, this is a train wreck right away. And there are coaches who nail those things and have ended up being bad coaches. It is a long haul, even within an NFL season. We might be 4 weeks in and be like, Mike McDonald's a god. And we might get 17 weeks in and then feel bad about Mike, or be like, okay, that was a good building year or whatever. An NFL season is a long haul, more than the offseason without any games are. So I think it has to be basically a work in progress from Mike McDonald until at the very least we're at the end of this season. But the things that we can look at are some of those points, which is the offense. Like, is he making the right decisions on fourth down? Is the offense having that? Because that's one of the advantages you have on offense, right? Is that pre-snap motion. If you're utilizing those pieces, then I think we have to feel good overall about Mike McDonald as a coach.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I said on that podcast when we were previewing the offseason, I was hoping that we would see some additions to the analytics department publicized this offseason. We haven't heard anything about that, although, you know, talking to people, it still seems like the expectation is that, you know, Mike McDonald will be pretty statistical. Someone I talked to made the comparison, talked about, like, you know, maybe some of his intuitions also just matched up well with what statistical analysis would say. That was something I remember hearing a lot about Mike Budenholzer when I was doing the NBA analytics rankings like 11 years ago, 10 years ago. So it turned out to be a pretty good indicator in his case. We'll see how it works out with McDonald. All right, before we get to previewing the Seahawks on both sides of the ball, we do need to look back at our predictions for who would return to the Seahawks.
Wait, I wanted to ask one question about that, though. On fourth down decisions, go for rates, where were the Ravens at last year, Ben? And where has John Harbaugh generally been?
So the Ravens were very good, famously, for quite some time, especially in that 2019 season when they were the number one seed and Lamar won his first MVP and they went for it all the time. And there was
that story in the Athletic
about Daniel Stern. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Was that the season they went for it in Seattle because Lamar talked him into it? Oh, yes. I'm still upset that they went for that.
And they were on fourth downs until last year. And I think the most likely explanation is that Baltimore's defense is really good. And when you're an NFL head coach and you have a great defense, it's very easy to want to trust that defense. So you're more likely to try to punt the ball and play good defense. And in their defense, they won a lot of games in the regular season. And I can't remember them making bad fourth down decisions in their playoff loss. I think they had other issues in that game.
One of the all-time best DVOAs.
Yep.
There was a certain argument that they were so good last year that reducing variability was actually more important to them than kind of maximizing the expected value of every fourth down. But we'll see how much Mike McDonald takes from that into Seattle, but certainly not coming from a situation that is averse to fourth downs. Yeah. All right, so percentage chances of returning. That we did this, let me see if I still have this up, on February 16th. So I guess I thought it was January, mid-January. So it's only been 6.5 months since we...
I think we waited a long time to record after the season because of the coaching search and everything.
Right. All right, Geno Smith. Ben said 90%, Tristan 90%, Kevin 85%. So we were on the right track there by that point. Drew Locke, Ben thought 50-50 that he would be back. No. Tristan said 5%. I said 25%. Lo and behold, as we saw on Hard Knocks offseason with the New York Giants, got an offer from the Giants to be Daniel Jones's backup. Although that was before the Giants knew that Danny Dimes was growing a beard. Totally different player now. Tyler Lockett, Ben said 70%, Tristan 85%. I was at 60%, a little bit skeptical with his big cap hit. He was able to restructure that and return. Noah Fant was one we were pretty far off on. Ben 5%, Tristan 20%, me 40%. Same with Leonard Williams, where Ben was the highest at 33%, Tristan 15%, me 10%. All right, as we switch sides to the defense, now there's a lot of guys who aren't back. For a while, it looked like we were all going to be wrong about Daryl Taylor, where Ben and I had 15%, Tristan had 10%. But lo and behold, you wait long
There it
enough to
is.
score this, and Daryl Taylor is not back. Jordan Brooks, we thought more likely would be Ben 67%, me 65%, Tristan 50%. Bobby Wagner, Ben and I were on this one. We were both at 15%. Tristan said 80% chance of him coming back. Jamal Adams, I was very on this one. 1%. Just did not see it happening. Tristan said 50%. Ben said 20%. And Quandre Diggs, Ben said 85%, Tristan 40%, I was 20%. So when you add those up, lo and behold, again it was fixed, and I ended up winning this one. I don't have the let's see, did I lose the
You just
final
cut you
numbers?
followed up on it because you won, right? You
I think we
kept those
always
in the
follow up
notes.
on it.
I don't know if that's true. I feel like we've done this before and we haven't
I think
followed up on it.
we I think this is the first time I have not won. So
I
I do
think so
remember
too.
following up.
Yeah.
Okay,
We always
so
follow up on over-unders and I never win those.
I
Was there any, I mean, we went over what surprised you from a percentage chance standpoint. Was there anything that stood out from what the Seahawks did as particularly surprising or notable?
I'm kind of kicking myself over the Quandre Diggs situation or the prediction, and you even said at the time that, like, looking at his cap hit and everything, there's just no way to make it work, and especially bringing in a new staff that might want to start turning over the defense and look for players that they can build a program with. It never really made sense to keep probably either one of the safeties or the linebackers that let go. So I think it's all pretty logical. It'll be interesting to see how it translates to the field.
It was interesting, the comments from Quandre Diggs. I don't think we got into this after he signed with the Titans. He was asked like whether he considered resigning with, or that was Jamal Adams, I guess, actually. He said, "Once you cut me, like it's done. It's over." So, but you know, I think a similar thing where like it's one thing to take less money to go play for the Titans, and another thing to go take less money to play for the team where you've been a star on in the past. That was probably part of my logic. Yeah, so Leonard Williams, the only defensive player of that group that we talked about that they did end up keeping on the roster all this way, showing, you know, kind of the value they put on him and including the defensive line when you add in the Byron Murphy, the second pick. Like this, if they're going to be successful in defense, it's going to start with the cornerbacks and the defensive line. Those are going to be the two spots for sure. But let's talk about the offense first. Last season, they finished 12th in DVOA. Ben, what's the over-under for where the Seahawks finish on DVOA this season?
Well, this is probably pretty similar to what we had in the podcast. I remember us saying like maybe 10 to 12 range, or although maybe I'm just inventing that to make it sound good last year. But I would think the same ballpark. I think there's an unknown of going from, I know we're all Ryan Grubb fans on this show, but there's still an unknown going from Shane Waldron, who's a proven NFL offensive coordinator, who I think is good despite the hate he got at times during from the Seahawks fan base last year. He got another offensive coordinator job, so it still seems to be viewed highly in the league. And they're going from someone from him to somebody who was at the college level until this past year. So I think Grubb should be good, but there's still kind of an unknown where at this time last year, Waldron wasn't really as much of an unknown. And then there's offensive line issues that we talked about. So all of that is why I'm not saying like higher than top 10 for over under, but maybe like 11.5 or something might be reasonable.
Tristan, what do you think?
Are we going over under on this then?
Yeah,
Ben said it.
let's do it.
Oh, I think I mean, What is over? Over is better, right?
I guess,
or do we say
I mean, we're talking about the
under?
ranking, so under is better in this case.
Okay. I think this team has a very good chance of being under. I would say that if the spread is 11.5, I'm picking them under. Right now, I mean, the only thing that holds them back from being one of the absolute top flight offenses in the league is that Geno Smith isn't Patrick Mahomes or Joe Burrow or somebody like that. Maybe Lamar Jackson. Like, there are a handful of quarterbacks who are confidently better. There are also a handful of quarterbacks who are confidently better who do not have the kind of weapons and scheme around them that Geno Smith does have. And I think that I think there's actually a good chance that the Seahawks offense is possibly better than like the Bills offense in the 2024 season, given everything that they have on the field, like healthy Ken Walker. The line, you know, Abe Lucas is a big question mark. When you talk about that motion, it might mitigate that slightly. And also having George Fant is starting at right tackle right now, right?
Yep.
Is that the plan?
Yep.
George Fant is not an inexperienced right tackle, right?
It's not like last year when it was, you know, Stone Forsythe and Jake Curran.
They went out of their way to make sure that they were protected in this situation if Abe Lucas wasn't healthy to begin the season. And so I think that drop off is not as significant as it may seem. We saw it last year with Ryan Grubb at UW. There was an offensive line that was probably talented, but I don't think you could just get, they weren't all 5-star recruits and they ended up being, you know, first round draft picks, those types of player. And that's partially because of the system and the scheme. I actually think that Geno Smith is a very similar quarterback to somebody like Michael Penix in that system. And I think that Geno Smith could end up being perceived. I think he could be I think he likely will be a Pro Bowl quarterback if he's healthy in 2024. But then you factor in DK Metcalf, the second season of JSN, Tyler Lockett maybe moving into a slightly different role with an experienced tight end, this offensive line. It's kind of like, I don't exactly know what those holes are. And if you feel confident in the person calling the plays and the quarterback getting the ball to the receivers where they need to, we might see a massive DK Metcalf season also. We haven't quite had the like huge breakout year from DK. And I think there's a chance that we could see a monster season from him. And then JSN becoming a much more prominent part of the offense. I feel like this could be, there's probably a ceiling on the offense. Of maybe, I don't think they're going to be top five, but I think this is an offense that health aside could be I think they likely will be a like 5-10 offense.
I mean, I think we saw the monster breakout season from DK Metcalf in year two in 2020 when he had 83 catches, 1,303 yards. Since then, he did have 90 catches in 2022, but has not topped 1,114 yards. So he hasn't gotten within like 190 basically yards of that total that was in 16 games back then, even with the shift to the 17 game season since then. And yeah, I mean, that would be really nice to have if that happened. I would endorse it. It would also be well timed for DK Metcalf in terms of a potential contract extension. I agree that with George Fant, the Seahawks, like there's a pretty high floor for the Seahawks. Well, at right tackle, Abe Lucas is out. The issue is like, who's the good offensive lineman while Abe Lucas is out? Like they need Charles Cross to take a step at left tackle. We didn't really see that in year two. You're sort of you're baking that in.
I mean, I'm not baking it in, but like, I also don't know if an offensive line needs a good lineman.
I mean, it's
like
more of a weak link situation, but I think right guard looks like a pretty weak link at this point. Am I wrong to think that?
Probably both their guards.
I mean, we'll see about Lakin Tomlinson. Again, there's like a veteran savvy there, and I think people are probably overrating him going against Jeffrey Simmons on one rep in a scrimmage environment. But
I don't feel down about Charles Cross.
I don't feel down about him either, but I'm just saying, like, if you're Abe Lucas was probably the Seahawks' best offensive lineman when they were both rookies. And so not having him, it's not
Abe
just
Lucas was
weakness.
A more experienced lineman, though, right?
I
than
agree.
Charles Cross was. And now you have Charles Cross in year three.
Well, we got to see it.
If Charles Cross is the more talented lineman, but didn't have the experience that Abe Lucas had, well, now it's been two more seasons, which he's been relatively healthy. And that experience is there. So, I mean, he's at a more difficult position, but I think Charles Cross, there are no question marks for me.
I think it's plausible he has a Pro Bowl season, but like,
yeah,
we need to see it. Like, we're talking about the expectations, the median case for this team. I don't think we can put him there. The Jackson, Smith and Jigba, like him kind of stepping up into that number two role is Tyler Lockett ages. That's like going to be a crucial factor here. I think there's not a lot of depth behind Noah Fant in terms of pass catching. That's going to be interesting, especially because he didn't have a very productive in terms of raw numbers season in 2023. His per target stats were quite good in an offense that typically played three wide receivers and often targeted, Will Dissly and Colby Parkinson, and didn't use the middle of the field that much.
So Grubb is not a huge thing. Tight end offense, though, right?
Is that sarcastic?
Do you feel like he's hitting tight ends that often? I mean, how many catches did Jack Westover have last year?
I mean, not as many as Roma Dunze and the three guys who were drafted in the top two rounds of the
exactly,
NFL draft. Yeah. I mean, you can attribute too much to the scheme and not enough to the personnel sometimes. What do we make of the fact that the Seahawks, like John Schneider, went out of his
46 catches? Actually, it was quite a few, to be honest.
And like that's his third and fourth down catches,
more than I would have thought.
Let's hope Jack Westover is back on the practice squad once he's healthy after reaching a settlement off of IR.
But if you take a gander at it, offensive receiving weapons wise, what does it look like? Where you have three great receivers and then you have another one.
I hope that's the situation. I don't know that I'm ready to say that the 2024 Seattle Seahawks have three great receivers.
You're not willing to say that?
Jackson Smith and Jigba was not great as a rookie, and Tyler Lockett began to experience some age-related decline. And like, again, if you're looking for the worst case scenario for the 2024 Seahawks, it's that Smith and Jigba isn't good enough to make up for Lockett's decline this year. What do we make of the fact that like John Schneider went out of his way to say that the Seahawks did not talk extension with Geno Smith this offseason? Here's what he said last week to Seattle reporters. There's a lot of people that want contract extensions, and I'm not going to get into the specifics of who they are and all that, but that's part of the job. It happens every year all the time. Yeah, only one of those guys is the starting quarterback and the most important player on the team. So I can't help but wonder if this is another case of the Seahawks being like so risk averse in terms of like committing long-term money to a bad contract, that they're unwilling to explore the possibility of getting a bargain if Geno Smith does have a good year in this Ryan Grubb offense. Is that fair, Ben?
Yeah, I think that could definitely be part of it. And also just a player with 2 years left on his deal, even if he doesn't have any guaranteed money in 2025, maybe if they start talking to players, one player with 2 years left on his deal, even if he's a quarterback, then they're worried about other players saying, oh, what about me in my deal?
Yeah, I hate that logic. Like, this is not a democracy here. Some positions are more important than others. Some players are more important than others. And having these blanket rules about guaranteed money and stuff like that, like, no, there's one position that is the NBA. And there are 21 positions or 20, 24, depending on how you want to count specialists. Or nickel, I guess, 25, that are the NFL. They're not the same thing. These are not the same. So
he's a 34-year-old quarterback, though. Like
that's the counter argument. Yeah,
he's not 26. If Geno Smith had the exact same stats that he's had these last two seasons, two Pro Bowls, MVP votes, and he was 26 years old, he'd have that extension, and it would be massive. So I think it's more about Geno Smith's age and how much they're willing to invest in him. It's probably still kind of a year-by-year situation because of his age, not because of anything to do with his ability necessarily.
I mean, the counter-argument is the guy who just turned 36 during training camp and is coming off a ruptured Achilles, I want to say. Kirk Cousins got like a massive amount of guarantees from the Atlanta Falcons last season. Like, if he does this again, then people are going to probably at some point have to acknowledge that Geno Smith is like a proven quarterback in the same way that they were forced to with Cousins after the Washington, then, the now Commanders tried to go year by year with him for a long period of time and ultimately backfired for them. So
maybe they just don't see any urgency. If they really have 2 years left on the deal and thinking of Cousins, they could tag him twice after that. That's four more years of club control until he's in his upper 30s.
That's fair.
And by then, hopefully they have some sort of succession plan.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was third downs. Because I've been curious about the Seahawks third downs for a while, and I did some research using NFL FastR, which Ben helped create. So I went and looked at, like, what are the expected third down conversion rates based on the distance you have to go? And last season, the Seahawks were only slightly less than average in terms of converting above and beyond the expected third down rate, but they were 24th in the expected rate going into third down. And if you look at it, they have not been higher than 20th in that category since 2019, which is very amusing because one of Pete Carroll's big philosophies is like makeable third downs. And number one, the makeable third down is getting a first down on first and second down. But number two, even by his philosophy, they weren't very good at it the last four seasons.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's the last four seasons rather than just one season. I've seen a lot of people point to the offensive line, or the collapse of the offensive line last year, is one of the reasons why they really struggled on third downs on offense, which I think makes sense because you're in third down, you're often in obvious pass situations. So if you can't pass protect, then you're probably going to have a bad time. But the offensive line wasn't as bad every year over the past 4 years as it was last year. So that it's probably not the only explanation, but if it's spanning multiple quarterbacks and offensive coordinators and offensive lines, then it's hard to pin down what exactly it might be.
Yeah, I just thought that was interesting because, you know, people will talk about the importance of third down specifically, but there is an influence of the first two downs. And It does speak to the second and 10 runs, I think, not producing the kind of makeable third downs you think they are going to produce.
Yeah, definitely not helping.
I guess I never took a position on the over-under. I'm going to take a slight over on 11.5. All right, defense. Seahawks last year finished 28th in DVOA, as we alluded to earlier. Ben, what's the over-under this year?
I don't think I took a position on offense either, but I'll say over.
Well, you don't have to if you said it.
Okay. for posterity. Okay, what is the over-under for defense? I'll say 19.5.
Tristan?
This team's going to be way under that.
Is this where we reference the Shiel Kapadia prediction for them?
What was Shiel Kapadia's prediction?
So he did a rankings of all 32 units on offense and defense. He took the over on offense. He had the Seahawks 15th there. On defense, he had the Seattle Seahawks number 5.
There we go.
That's aggressive. Love it. Third Belton brother, Shiel Kapadia, we should know.
15th is fine. That's not insulting. I mean, if they're the 15th offense and the 5th best defense, that's a really freaking good team.
That is a really good team. It's probably a 10-7 team.
I think maybe the best part about the Seahawks team is that depending on how you're approaching it and how confident you want to be, I mean, Shiel Kapadia obviously has ties to Seattle. He also covers and is from the city of a rival NFC team. So I wouldn't exactly argue homerism here. But depending on the beholder, you could view either the offensive unit or the defensive unit as being somewhere close to elite. And I think that's maybe the most exciting part about the Seahawks defense. But Mike McDonald is what is exciting to me about the Seahawks defense. And just talent-wise, they were not the 28th best defense in the NFL last season. And again, I love Pete Carroll. We will always love Pete Carroll, but it just wasn't the right scheme for the right time. You have Devin Witherspoon being healthier. You have Reek Willen looking a lot more comfortable. The Byron Murphy draft pick. I think that when you look at this offense, I always get so excited about those teams and whether they're great or not. You know, there's been times that the Jets haven't been, but you see those teams that have a young defensive minded coach like the Texans, like the Jets, and how fast they play and how hard they hit. And I think the Seahawks defense has it in them with Mike McDonald to be a defense like that, both talent wise and coaching wise. You know, like also the Ravens last year, seeing that defense when the Seahawks played the Ravens, they got down, was it a field goal or something that they gave up first? I think it was kind of like a back and forth.
Yeah. I think it was 3-0 for a very long time. And then
it was like back.
You were there, right, Ben?
Yeah, I was.
Yikes.
I think it was like 3-0 close to halftime. And then they just got destroyed very
they
quickly.
blew it open.
Yeah.
But I was just like, the Seahawks aren't scoring 3 points against this team. You know, like that is how good that defense was. And we can litigate it or whatever. The talent, it's not all that different as far as pedigree for a lot of the players on that Ravens defense versus the Seahawks. And the Seahawks actually have some players with maybe even greater pedigree, right? So it's going to take time for them in the system. But when you look at somebody like Byron Murphy, who is the second defender drafted this year, right? Dallas Turner went ahead of him. But who is the second defender drafted in the draft? When you look at Witherspoon, who is a top five pick, when you look at Reek Woolen, who's been a Pro Bowler, when you look at Leonard Williams, there's high, high end talent on this defense across the board. And I think even without Uchenna Nwosu at the beginning of the season, when I look at these rookie quarterbacks that they're going to probably face in week one and week two, right? Or are they starting Jacoby Brissett?
Yeah,
in New England?
It's Brissett, at least for week one, but presumably week two.
When I look at Bo Nick, like they are going to be putting those quarterbacks through hell on this defensive line. Somebody like Derek Hall, I think, is going to step up. I think the pass rush in general is going to look a lot better than it has in the past. And if it isn't working, I also have confidence in Mike McDonald figuring it out.
So it was 7-0. The Ravens did score a touchdown to take the lead on their third possession. It was still 17-0 midway through the third quarter, or second quarter, I should say, before the Ravens went on their second touchdown drive. At that point, the Seahawks had run 20 plays and gained 45 yards.
Not great. That was the 12th best offense in the league, right? By DVOA.
Yeah. I mean, this is part of why the offense looked a little worse. They faced an extremely difficult slate of defenses, including both Baltimore and Cleveland, who were outstanding defenses from the AFC North. And you know, I don't think the schedule of opposing defenses will be quite as difficult for the Seahawks this year. Yeah, I mean, I'm also taking a strong under on this. I think Shield is probably like, you know, sort of like, well, the logic is sort of, if the Seahawks do this, I can have called it and no one else will be this aggressive on the Seahawks defense. I like, you know, the defensive line is awesome.
You're calling Shield's body a hot take guy?
Not a hot take guy. Oh, look, I mean, this is a logical move.
Shield just throws out takes to say that he was right later.
No, this is a logical
move. I feel like
move.
Shield's the exact opposite of that.
Shield is the exact opposite. What it is it's like the bold prediction theory. It's like you take the logical kernel and then expand it into a giant popcorn of the bold prediction. So I think it's very much in the spirit of the Pelton cast, this particular prediction. The defensive line, I don't think anyone has any questions about the corners.
I'm sure somebody has some questions about the defensive line, but
I have some questions about their edge rusher without like
yeah,
a
yeah, no, I'm
a
not
blue
counting
chip
them
edge
as
rusher.
Defensive line.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm counting them separately.
Okay.
Edge,
okay.
I very much, I have questions about, I share Tristan's optimism that I think there's just enough depth that, you know, assuming Uchenna Nwosu is not out too long, that someone else is going to pop from that group of Boye Mafe and Derek Hall, et cetera, and join him as kind of a Andre Jones, who's now in that mix, I guess, as well. Corner, I feel very good about Reek Woolen's chances of having a bounce back season. Obviously, Devin Witherspoon is, you know, the most valuable guy in this defense. Shield also did his trade value rankings and had Witherspoon and DK Metcalf were the two Seahawks among the 77 players on that list. Safety, I feel reasonably okay about. And then linebacker to me is going to make or break this defense. That's the spot, especially with the lack of depth there. We saw Tyrese Knight was exposed a little bit, I think, playing as much as he did in the preseason, which was great to do that in the preseason. And it sounds like Jerome Baker is going to be back for week one, but certainly the biggest question mark on this defense.
Yeah, for me, definitely linebacker, then pass rush, at least until Nwosu comes back from his injury, which is a bummer. It's too bad that he's not back out there.
But sounds like, fortunately, shouldn't be too long. John Schneider said last week he will not go on the PUP list. There's no plans for that, no need for it. So back presumably at some point within the first 4 weeks of the season. All right, well, let's put it all together now. We've talked about the offense. We've talked about the defense. The Seahawks over-under is 7.5 wins. We'll go through everyone's over-under as traditionally we do in a little bit here. But Ben, where are you taking the over-under here?
I'll take the over. 7.5 seems pretty low. And although their division could be quite challenging this year with the full season of Kyler Murray and the Rams and 49ers, who were clearly better than the Seahawks last year. They will be tough sledding for parts of it, but I can't. I think it's more likely that they get to 8 wins or above than that they are a 7-10 team.
Tristan?
Easy over on this one. They're one of the easiest overs, I think, across the NFL, to be honest.
You making this a lock?
Oh yeah,
I was
no,
going to
it's a
ask
lock.
that.
I mean, I guess we'll deal with more of that later.
Okay, so maybe the more interesting question here is, let's say we inflate the Seahawks over under. Let's say they're at Seahawks 8.5. Ben, where are you at?
Yeah, that's definitely harder, and I guess I would go under there.
So you're saying
Tristan?
you think the most likely outcome is they go 8-9.
I think so.
I'm still
Yeah.
over. I feel very good about this team. I think there are other teams in the NFC West who are going to be worse than expected. In fact, I think every other team in the NFC West is going to be worse than expected.
I don't know if I agree with that.
You
Before
add in the extra home game as well.
the Abe Lucas like latest news, I would have been over. That has pushed me to under, is where I'm at on the Seahawks. On
You think
Seahawks 8.5.
Abe Lucas is worth a game?
No, but Abe Lucas is like takes it from 8.7 expected wins to 8.3, let's say.
Okay.
Okay. Let's talk about the NFC West a little bit. I don't know if you know this. The San Francisco 49ers played in the Super Bowl last year. They lost to the Kansas City Chiefs. You may have seen that. The Los Angeles Rams, despite the loss of everyone on their defense but Aaron Donald, who is now retired, overachieved and made the playoffs last year. The Arizona Cardinals were trying to be very bad, and they were, but did not draft a quarterback and are now putting multiple pieces around Kyler Murray. How are we feeling about the state of the NFC West?
In terms of the Seahawks, not the best. There's a lot of other divisions that I would rather be in at this time, and it's really rough to have both Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay in the same division, because that's four of your division games every year against really good coaches, and they've in general had really good teams. And last year they paid for it by getting swept, and only one of the games was competitive, the second Rams game. So unless Matthew Stafford ages out of being good, or there's some major injury with one of those teams, I think all four of those games are going to be really hard. The Cardinals, I'm less sure about, and feels like everyone kind of expects them to have a really good offense and Kyler Murray to come back, but I know he was coming off a major surgery and everything last year, but their offense wasn't amazing with him there, even though they did play against some of the most terrible defenses in the league, like the Eagles and Seahawks. So I'm a little bit skeptical about them, but there's still the Rams and 49ers in that division. So I think the Seahawks are, I haven't looked at the over-unders for anyone other than the Seahawks, but I would assume that their expected wins are third in the division.
They are. The Rams at 8.5 are closer than you might think.
Interesting. Okay.
Tristan, what are you feeling about the NFC West? Well, we just heard what you're feeling, but explain it, unpack it for us.
No, I think the NFC West is still one of the most competitive divisions in football, obviously. And it's kind of, I think it's going to be fun to play against coaches like Sean McVay. And it's fun. We were going into battle with a 72-year-old head coach against Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay for many years. And while Pete Carroll kind of owned the Niners for a period of time, it was only inevitable that the Niners were going to catch up. So now, going in with a coach like Mike McDonald, who specifically is a defensive-minded coach and is a young defensive-minded coach, who already as defensive coordinator has shut down the four, maybe made the Niners play the worst game of their entire season last year against the Ravens on Christmas Day, right? So just going to battle with somebody like that is way more fun than it was, whereas with Pete Carroll, and you're just like, I know that we're going to do the same old shit that they've figured out, right?
I
I
mean,
think they are more scared about Mike McDonald being in the division than not.
It definitely was a factor in the Seahawks hiring Mike McDonald, is like how well he did against the NFC West offenses specifically. And, you know, Sean McVay over the offseason on podcast talked about the difficulty of going against McDonald schematically. It is fun.
Didn't the Rams just torch the Ravens when they played last year?
Did they?
I know that they, yeah. Oh, yeah. That game went to overtime and it was like 30 something to 30 something, I think.
Well, maybe all the more remarkable that he still found it difficult to go against.
Yeah, it was like one of their worst defensive performances. The Ravens won. They won in overtime. But the Niners being a big part about that. So I'm excited about that. I mean, the Cardinals, we'll see. Not like a huge Kyler guy. It is putting a lot of responsibility on a rookie receiver as being in a massive impact. I'm obviously biased, but I think Rome Odunze is better. And we'll have a better rookie season as well.
You are obviously biased.
But I don't think there's that big of a difference between those two players. How about that? As people are giving them credit for. But
I suppose it's probably fair. I think a lot of it with Marvin Harrison Jr. is like the Cardinals receivers were not good at all. So it's much easier to upgrade than a team that already had DJ Moore and got Keenan Allen.
The Niners, this is a long-term thing. My favorite thing that the Niners did this offseason was extend Brandon Ayuk. And I was so terrified about the idea of them making one of those trades. Because if they trade Brandon Ayuk to somebody for, what was it, 2 first-round picks, at least a first-round pick plus something like that, the return that they would have gotten for somebody to have gotten the privilege to pay Brandon Ayuk would have been incredible. And when the Niners re-upped him, I was like, thank God. Because that is the best thing that could have happened. Teams paying a player who isn't a quarterback is the best thing that could happen to everybody else in the division, in my opinion. So when that happened, then bringing back Trent Williams, he's a factor right now in the short term. But the long term, I just feel like things are a little... I'm less confident in the Niners. Like, going into the season, I would not just pen them in as the best team in the NFC right now. There'll definitely be battles with the Seahawks. It'll be difficult, but I could see them going 2-2 in those two games, in those four games.
I wouldn't pen them in. I would definitely pencil them in. They have the number one DVOA projection. I think I heard Aaron Schatz say on the Locked On NFL podcast that they have basically double the Super Bowl odds of any other NFL team. I mean, the Rams is interesting because of the fact that Aaron Donald has tortured the Seahawks for so long. So to have him out of the division is just
and that's
a huge
the other
win.
Piece. Having Aaron Donald, the best player, the best defensive player in the NFL, out of the league, who again has killed the Seahawks year after year. People are underrating just how important Aaron Donald is.
It's interesting because that Rams defense was much better than the Seahawks last year. They had a lot of young players, not a lot of proven talent, but they had Aaron Donald, and how much Aaron Donald was kind of propping up the rest of that defense will be interesting to see this season. And I think it's part of why that Rams, you know, over under is only 8.5, despite the fact that they won 10 games last season.
I went Jonathan Taylor at pick 10. Very nice.
All right, should we get to the over unders?
Let's do it.
Put our money figuratively. This year, I'm not in Vegas for week one of the NFL season like I was last year.
I'm going to be there week two, though. So
I guess it was 2 years ago now.
I'm going to be there in the morning of week two. So
well,
if
you
we
can't
need
do the over-under bets.
Yeah, you can. You can do over-under bets throughout the year. You think they lock them? They just cut it off?
Yeah, I don't think they do regular season win totals during the season, do they? I don't know. I'm not familiar with that.
I'm pretty sure they do.
I think you can bet on division odds and conference odds, but not win totals.
Did we send those to people?
Yes. Yes, some of the winners of the Fantasy League did win. I think whoever was in Ben's Fantasy League got a lot of money because Ben's locks were all winners that year.
There
we
go.
We had a great season. All right, we start with the aforementioned Arizona Cardinals with a line of 6.5 wins after winning 4 last season. Ben, let's start with you.
This is hard because I don't believe in them that much, but at the same time, 6.5 is pretty low. But I guess if I'm believing in other teams in the division, I'll say under.
Justin?
They truly are one of the hardest ones, I feel like.
By the way, heavy action here on the over.
I'm going to go over on the Cardinals. I think they get to 7 wins.
Yeah, I tend to agree. They went they went 3-5 in Kyler's 8 starts last season, which prorates out to 6 wins. And I do think there's a more talented roster around it. I mean, this team was, we expect, thought that they were coming into the season trying to lose games last year. They weren't necessarily that focused on getting Caleb Williams after all, but still, it's going to be a more competitive team, I expect, this season. Atlanta
in the next
Falcons.
40, 45 seconds, where do your stats have AJ Brown?
AJ Brown is 12th. So I would recommend taking him. Although I think Kyren Williams, yeah, I think he and Kyren was, Williams are basically the same.
AJ Brown, Kyren Williams, Travis Etienne.
Etienne's or a bit lower.
Devontae Adams or somebody like that. I could go a little bit deeper.
A bit lower.
I got to do AJ even. All right, fine.
I can hear the countdown. Okay.
It's half point PPR, right?
No, this is full point. Half point is only in Champions League.
Oh, only the champions get a half point PPR.
Absolutely. We voted for it. This is a democracy. Wow. Or Atlanta Falcons. I mean, I think it sets the league apart. I like it. Atlanta Falcons, a line of 9.5 wins. By the way, you should probably check that before you started drafting.
I truly thought it was full point PPR. Or a half point PPR for this one also.
Atlanta Falcons, a line of 9.5 wins coming off of last season's 7-10 record. They are one of the trendy picks to improve with the addition of Kirk Cousins. Ben.
Last year, I made them my lock. It failed miserably, but the over on them as my lock, it did not work out. But I'm going to go back to the well, at least for the over, because I think they could be good with Kirk Cousins. They have a very easy schedule, although they did last year too. So I will take the over.
What is the number again?
9.5.
For the Falcons?
The Atlanta Falcons. Heavy action on the over.
I was really thinking about every NFC South team. And I mean, they sort of hedge things because, like, what is our over-under on Michael Penix starts? If the number is, I'm going to say 1.5.
I mean, it's probably injury. I don't think that he's going to replace Cousins due to performance necessarily. So 1.5 sounds right.
Over-under.
Under.
I just kind of see a world that Penix comes in the second half and plays really, and maybe it ends up as kind of a boondoggle for the Falcons overall. I guess I'm going to go over for the Falcons here, but it is a begrudging over.
I'm the only one here who's going to go under. Yeah, this is much too optimistic about the Falcons and Kirk Cousins coming off a massive injury at age 36 for me. Sorry. Baltimore Ravens, despite the loss of Mike Macdonald, it lost a line of 10.5 wins. I mean, that is 2.5 less than they won last season. Ben?
I think I take the over on them every year just because I think they're a hard team to play against in the regular season. So I will take the over.
Definitely an over.
Yep. We're all over here. I think the infrastructure is with Lamar Jackson is just too strong. Well, this will be an interesting test of infrastructure and quarterback. The Buffalo Bills, a line of 10.5 wins.
I think NFL teams are about as good as their quarterback. I think Josh Allen is comfortably at worst the second best quarterback in the league. So I believe in him and I will take the over, even though they do have a pretty hard schedule, assuming that Aaron Rodgers is back to himself.
I am going to go under on the Buffalo Bills. I mean, what did they win last year? Were they 11-6?
Yes.
I don't know whether they were lucky to get to 11-6 or unlucky to be at 11-6.
I mean, the Pythagorean record was 11.5 wins, so they were unlucky to be at 11-6, I would say.
Slightly unlucky to be there, but
obviously the loss of Stephon Diggs playing into this line.
That loss, and then also just the hypothetical Jets looming. I know the Patriots are probably going to be very bad, but still a first place schedule. And I'm going under for Buffalo.
The hypothetical Jets remain much better than the actual Jets, so I'm taking the over. Carolina Panthers, a line of 5.5 wins after sending the number one pick to Chicago.
Feels really hard to go under on a 5.5, but I guess with them I'll believe it when I see it, so I'll say under.
I'm under also.
I'm gonna take a slight over here. I think there's more talent here than we saw last season, and Dave Canales is gonna get more out of it.
You went all in on the Panthers running backs and fantasy. So.
Well, I did. It's true.
You believe in the Panthers more than anybody else does.
I don't know. I mean, lots of people are in on Jonathan Brooks. I'm not like, it's like a ridiculous out of left field thing. And then Chuba Hubbard's a good, you know.
I have to go Kupp at pick 34, right?
Oh,
there's some pretty good receivers out there. I'm going to do one more team, and then I'm going to follow up with you because I'm two picks away.
I mean, Kamara, if he's still out there, would be quite good as well.
Kamara is out there. Or you're looking at it right now, you're saying.
I mean, I am your co-manager of your team so that I can commission this league, be the commissioner of this league. So, yes, I am seeing it.
You're taking commissions on this league?
I am taking commissions. If someone wants to pay me to ruin Tristan's team, please do. It's not going to be very much anyway. Chicago Bears with Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze, and the glow-up from Matt Eberflus. In line of 8.5 wins.
God, that is so aggressive.
That is very aggressive. I will take the under. That does feel.
I am taking the over on the Chicago Bears. Hold on. Kamara, because I need a second running back, or do I wait for Kupp with pick 39?
I think there's a decent chance he's still going to be out there. I would take Kamara.
You would take Kamara. I should consider a tight end here between Kelsey or Laporta.
Kelsey, I do have ahead of Kamara. Give you away too much of my draft strategy by then.
I'm taking Kelsey. And then I'm going to try to get Cooper Kupp with the next pick. Oh, boy, running backs. Okay.
All right. I'm going to take an under on Chicago as well.
Wow.
Even though it bums me out to not root for the.
Well, where were they? Weren't they 8-9 last year?
No, they were 7-10.
They were a pretty good 7-10 last year. That was with Justin Fields. And
one of the things that Aaron Schatz mentioned in the aforementioned Lockdown NFL is that their defense in the second half, like that doesn't necessarily project over. And particularly, they caused a lot of turnovers. So Cincinnati Bengals, a line of 10.5 wins.
Wow. That seems very aggressive. I'll take the under.
I'm going to also take the under on the Bengals. God, these are all, I have no feel for any of these.
We are all unders on the Bengals. Cleveland Browns, a line of 8.5 wins coming off of 11 last season.
God.
It's supposed to be hard. That's the point.
I'm kind of pessimistic on all of the non-Ravens teams in this division. And I don't want to say under on three teams in the division. But I also really don't really believe in Deshaun Watson. So I'll take the under here.
Tristan? Are you too busy lamenting the loss of Cooper Kupp?
Cooper Kupp. No, I got Alvin Kamara, so I'm okay. what was that? What are we talking about?
Cleveland Browns, line of half win.
No,
you could be eating a pastrami sandwich right now. That's what you're telling me.
So why is the Browns, is it just defensive regression and that's why the Browns under is so significantly lower than the wins last year?
Yeah, I mean, they also outperformed their Pythagorean, which was 8.9 wins, so I think that's a big factor in it too.
Aren't there health questions about Deshaun Watson too? Doesn't he have like a messed up shoulder or something still too?
That sounds right.
I wanted to go under, and that is as good of a reason as any. This is, I mean, when I look at this division, we'll get to that with Pittsburgh, but I think it's a Baltimore and Pittsburgh division in a lot of ways.
Interesting. We will not agree on that one. Dallas Cowboys, a line of 9.5 wins.
That seems like a huge overreaction to all the, I guess, bad publicity they got over the offseason, where they didn't really have that many losses aside from Tyron Smith, which, yes, is a big loss, but they were a good team last year. They still have Dak Prescott for one more year at least. They got CeeDee Lamb back. So I will say lock over.
Love that dead air from Tristan.
Why aren't you going?
Because we traditionally go Ben, you, me. But
I'm
going to go second here. They're also a lock for me. The over is a lock.
Let's call it a lock all around.
All right, let's do it. I don't think we've ever done that before. I think that's the first time.
I think so too.
Even the year, like, who were the teams that had like really ridiculous lines? Like, you usually don't see them anymore. But back in the day, where there was some
The
really.
Raiders after 2016 when they had all those close games. I think that was the biggest lock we've ever done.
All right, the Fighting Bo Nixes of Denver, who the Seahawks will be seeing this Sunday. We'll preview that on the weekly pod in line of 5.5. Oh my God. I was gonna say I think they might be the worst team in the league, but even that line feels still a little bit low to me.
I'll say under, although obviously the rookie quarterback Bo Nix factor is a huge unknown. Yeah, I'll take the under. I don't really see any reason to believe in this team right now.
I'm gonna go over. Just I getting to 6 wins is not that hard.
That's my
That's still two
position as
games
well.
against the Raiders. If it would have been even a game higher, I would have been under, but that's just too low of a line.
Detroit Lions, a line of 10.5 wins coming off of 12 last season.
Think this is a good line. This is a hard one. I guess I'll take the over, given that their offense was very good and nothing about that has changed. So we should expect it to be good. And even if teams like the Packers or Bears are better this year, then I think they could get to 11 games.
Definitely an over here. The I mean 10.5 wins is what was the record last year?
12.
12. So, you know, it's still a game and a half more than they had last year. You have a very young offense getting a little bit older. Aiden Hutchinson very young. Like this team is they're still on the heading upside of the curve right now.
They did only have 9.6 Pythagorean wins, but I'm going to also make this an over. So a clean sweep on that one. Green Bay Packers in a line of 9.5 wins.
That seems low to me, so I'll take the over. They're a hard team because it's one of those examples of a team like putting it together in the second half, and often that's not predictive. And I'm sure there's discussion of this in the FTN chapter that I haven't read yet. But I'll take the over. I think their offense could be quite good this year.
I'm gonna go a slight under.
Despite the second half factor, still a top three offensive projection in DVOA.
Wow.
So I'm
Okay.
taking the over here. Houston Texans, DVOA's number four projected team this season. Line of
Wow.
9.5 wins.
Oh, 9.5.
This division's really, yeah, I know.
You're like, I know, I've thought.
This division's really hard for me. I could see any of the non-Titans teams being like surprisingly good, or maybe su not surprisingly in the Texans case. So I'm having a hard time deciding about any of them, starting with the Texans. I guess I believe in their offense. Maybe Stefon Diggs can add a little bit, and I'll take the over, and this is probably the one I feel least great about so far.
Easy over for the Texans. In fact, I will call it, what was it, 9.5?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's a lock right there. 10
Okay.
wins for the Houston Texans coming off the season that they had last year, young receiving core and adding Stephon Diggs. Plus with DeMeco Ryans, I mean, they're structured differently than the Seahawks are structured, but they're not structured that differently than the Seahawks are. And I think this team, there are a lot of similarities between them and the Seahawks.
Indianapolis Colts staying
You
in the
didn't pick the
AFC.
Houston Texans, so
Oh,
you need to
I
say
took an
it.
over as well.
Yeah.
Indianapolis Colts, a line of 8.5 wins.
Again, another AFC South team I'm struggling with. I could very easily see them getting past this, and perhaps well past this, if Richardson pans out. I think their coaching staff and organization are generally pretty good. But with all that said, I think 8.5 is a little aggressive for what we know, what we've have seen from Anthony Richardson to this point. So I'll take the under here.
I'm gonna also be under. They're just a hard team to project, and just assume slotting them in for 9 wins feels like too much.
They won 9 games last year, but a 7.5 Pythagorean differential. So I'm going to take the under here. Jacksonville Jaguars also 8.5 wins.
For them, it's a lot easier for me to see the over, yeah, given that they do have a proven quarterback. Who he will throw the ball to aside from Christian Kirk and, I guess, Evan Ingram.
Hopefully all to Christian Kirk and Evan Ingram.
Yeah. Yeah, for your fantasy perspective, yes. So I believe in them more than the Colts, I think, for the same line. So I'll take the over here.
Totally agree. Easy over.
We are all on the same page here. Kansas City Chiefs, a line of 11.5 wins, tied for the highest in the NFL, coming off of their second consecutive Super Bowl win.
The Chiefs are hard because they're probably the best team when they're actually trying, but every regular season they seem to realize that there's less and less point to trying in the regular season of comical lengths last year, and they still won the Super Bowl at the end. So how much are they really going to care about this? At the same time, they did add a lot to the receiving room, which was really their weakness last year. So I guess I'll say over, but I don't think this is a crazy line or anything.
I'm going to also say over. Really, just I don't think they have any competitors in the AFC West.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs can kind of sleepwalk their way to 11 wins.
I'm trying to remember whether they had any competitors in the AFC West last year. I mean, the Chargers were... Yeah, the Chargers won five games last season. So
very
no.
Bad.
Yeah. So, no, I don't think that matters. They won 11 games with the AFC West being that bad. So I'm taking a slight under here. I mean, I don't think it's like egregious or anything.
Well, what was the line?
Last year?
This year?
11.5.
So they have to get to 12 wins.
Yeah, which is more than they won last year.
Yeah, no, they're getting to 12.
Okay. Las Vegas Raiders staying in the AFC West with a line of 6.5 wins.
I think they can get to 7 wins, not for any good reason, but just because I'm not totally sure about the Chargers or Broncos.
I agree. Is Gardner Minshew starting for them?
Yes, that's the good reason. Minshew magic.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of the thing, though. You mentioned the Colts win total from last year, and we all were shocked to hear how many games the Colts won. Right? It doesn't feel the Colts don't feel like they won 9 games last year. I do think the extra home game kind of sways things a little bit. That's the AFC had it last year, but the Raiders won't have the benefit of that this year. But Gardner Minshew just wins games, and for this over under, I'm going over for the Raiders.
All right, Los Angeles Chargers 8.5.
Does anybody know Justin Herbert's injury status?
Jim Harbaugh does.
Okay, so point taken. I'll take the under, just given the question marks around that and who he's going to throw the ball to. And it's been a while since we have seen Jim Harbaugh in the NFL, although he was very good last time.
I'm going to begrudgingly go over here.
I'm also an over here. I do think, you know, healthy Herbert, Harbaugh, it's more likely than not to be above 500 team.
A Jim Harbaugh over in a sort of in the Pete Carroll way that he did things. somehow he finds a way to win some games. To win some games that he wouldn't have otherwise. And I think Jim Harbaugh will do that again this year.
LA Rams, line of 8.5 wins.
I think it's hard to see them as having a losing season more likely than a winning season, given that they still do have Sean McVay and Matt Stafford, Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp. So even if their defense is not very good, I think they could still get to 9 games. So I'll take the over.
You go first, Kevin.
I also am taking the over for more or less the same reasons.
I'm going to go under on the Rams. Without Aaron Donald, this was a team that a year ago we kind of felt like was one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Yeah, and then we saw them play the Seahawks in week 1.
We were so confident before that game with our chances of victory.
I think that Matt Stafford's health is obviously a question. The receivers' health is a question. Puka's a little bit injured also, right?
I don't know that information.
I haven't seen it.
It's a very tough division. They have the extra game, this is a being without Aaron Donald. We have not seen Sean McVay without Aaron Donald. And I think things are a little bit more difficult in this new world.
All right, Miami Dolphins, a line of 9.5 wins.
I think they could get to 10 wins. I don't feel that confident about this. And this is in part a vote of confidence against the Jets and Patriots, but I think they can get over here.
I'm also going over.
I took the under here mostly because I had too many overs. But everyone else is trending towards overs, and the action has mostly been on 24 of the 32 teams. There's been more action on the over thus far, which is interesting. These lines all from ESPN Bet, I should note.
People like betting overs.
It's more fun. Minnesota Vikings, yep. A line of 6.5 wins.
I am not a Sam Darnold believer, so I will take the under.
I'm also going under.
All right, for the same logic, even though I had them as an over before, I probably should switch them to an under. All right.
I actually really like Kevin O'Connell, and I think can put together a good offense for them, but they don't have the talent right
Their
now.
Their defense projections are quite good, too. New England Patriots, a line of 4.5 wins after winning 4 games in Bill Belichick's final season.
Oh, Lord.
I think they'll probably be the worst team in the NFL, and I will take the under. I have a lot of unders on very low totals, which is probably a bad idea, but I can't go over for them.
I am actually going over for them.
I'm also
so
over.
Few games to win.
Yeah.
I mean, even, you know, Jacoby Brissett, I know he's starting. If Jacoby Brissett plays half the year, can he squeak out a handful of victories? It's kind of like, probably.
He's actually been sneakily pretty good in the opportunities he's had. It's one of the mysteries for me is why he's never gotten more of a chance than he has. So in terms of them winning games, him playing more, it's probably good.
Why haven't Tyrod Taylor and Jacoby Brissett gotten more of a chance? Yeah. I can't put my finger on it.
Geno Smith.
Jameis Winston. New Orleans Saints. Line of 7.5 wins.
I think I've taken the under on them every single year we've done this, so no reason to deviate now. Although I could see them being slightly better than this, but I'll take the under.
Can I ask you a fantasy question? I'm here at pick 87. I drafted Anthony Richardson as my starting quarterback. I kind of like Jaden Daniels as a flyer.
I feel like if you draft Anthony Richardson, you want someone more reliable as your backup quarterback. But I guess there's not really anyone more reliable other than Brock Purdy.
Keon Coleman. I don't need to draft a quarterback right now.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at, Rodgers, I guess. Reliable wouldn't exactly be the way I'd describe it.
It would decidedly not be the adjective that I would use.
I also like Caleb Williams. Oh my God.
What happens if you don't pick anyone? You just auto pick.
Auto draft. I'm going Jaden Daniels. Take it a flyer. Jaden Daniels and Anthony Richardson are both very much flyer quarterbacks. Like either of them could be really good.
Richardson could be really good this year.
All right. New Orleans Saints, line of 7.5 wins.
I hate, do we have to do the NFC South?
We're looking over-unders for 28 of 32 teams.
I am begrudgingly going over for the Saints as well.
Did you know the Saints won 9 games last season?
They were annoyingly competent.
Did you know they had the Pythagorean expectation of 10 wins last season? I know all these things were news to me, so they caused me to take the over. Shouts to Derek Carr, I guess. New York Giants. Line of 6.5 wins. They did not win 10 games last year.
The Saints beat the Falcons by 31 points in the last week of the season. I have absolutely zero memory of that game happening.
I think that was were the Falcons playoff hopes still alive?
I believe they did maybe need to win. There's like one of them needed to win it.
Ooh.
Sorry for deviating our conversation. What was the next team?
New York Giants, 6.5 wins.
New York Giants, 6.5 wins. That seems like a lot. Is Daniel Jones still their starting quarterback? I'm
He is, but he has a
gonna
beard.
come out.
Ben, how many wins does the beard account for you?
Oh, at least a half.
So you're going push?
I have not
I
seen a
didn't say I
beard,
had them at
so
six before.
I'm unaffected by the beard so far.
Wow.
Tristan?
Oh, did Ben say something?
I said under.
Yeah.
I am gonna also go under.
That's a coin sweep on this one. Beard or no? New York Giants, a line of 9.5 wins.
Wait.
You just did the New York
I'm
Giants.
sorry, New York
Hold
Jets.
on.
New York
Okay.
Jets.
If the Giants are at 9.5, that's the next lock. Just 9.5. That's
People
actually
really believe in
lower.
Malik Nabers. They really believe in Malik Nabers.
That's lower than I thought it would be. I thought people would say, oh, their defense was great last year and they're getting Aaron Rodgers back, so we're going to have a really high total for them. 9.5 actually makes this harder, but I'm
They
still going to
won
be a
eight games last year, nine,
seven.
seven. Okay.
But with a 5.4 Pythagorean expectation.
Oh boy.
Yeah, they got killed in a lot of games. I'm gonna take the under. I'm 9.5 is not that high, but I'm also not that much of a believer in them.
Who's their backup quarterback?
I started a lot of guys last year. Mike White was involved. He was off, White
Mike
Lotus.
White's not even on an NFL team, but who's their backup quarterback this year?
Tyrod
Oh, this
Taylor,
year?
speaking of. Yes.
Oh.
Who? No, he is not. He is the Jets. Yes, you're right.
Are you still doing the Giants?
I'm still doing
Their over
the
under is not 9.5, Kevin.
Giants.
I'm going over for the Jets. I think this is kind of a tasty one, to be honest. Offensive
No.
talent.
I'm not quite confident enough to make this a lock, but this was an easy under for me.
Really? An
Oh
easy
yeah.
under?
Oh, I am like what it, Jets fans being excited is like Mariners fans being excited. Always
That is
read the opposite direction.
actually less true than I feel like you'd think.
What do you mean? Like the Jets have had better years?
They don't have a Chad Pennington statue in New York. Like,
Yeah, because they won the Super Bowl in 1969, and there's no equivalent of Joe Namath in Mariners history. I agree with that. I'm talking about like the
no,
last 20 years.
if the Mariners had, they've won playoff games with the last couple of generations of Jets. They've made AFC championship games. The Mariners are not, they are not comparable to the Mariners.
I mean, the Mariners have made the ALCS plenty of times.
Plenty, two is plenty of times. I'm talking about after.
I mean, the Jets have made it to the conference championship three times since 1982. So I
But
think, you
two of
know, they
those times
haven't.
were in the
The
last
last time they
25
made the
years.
playoffs was 2010.
Wow. They're overdue.
Did go 10-6 one of those seasons in the Fitzmagic era. That was a very Mariners-y. They went 10-6 and still missed the playoffs.
I'm going. Oh, we are over on the Jets.
Okay.
It's a
Good luck.
tasty Jets team.
Good luck. Philadelphia Eagles, a line of 10.5 wins.
Wow. So the Cowboys were 9.5, and the Eagles are 10.5.
That is correct.
That seems. I guess you could talk the Eagles into getting better because most of their issues were on defense last year, and you would expect that to regress. Their offense was still pretty good despite all of the stories and things about Jalen Hurts and the relationship between him and the coaching staff, but their offense was not the problem last year. Given all that, I think this is much less clear than the Cowboys, but I think I will go over on them.
I am also going over.
I don't feel great
Wow.
about
Not only are we
it.
disagreeing, I have the Philadelphia Eagles under as a lock.
Wow, that is too bold.
Their Pythagorean record last year was 8.1 wins. They were like a bad football team last season.
Were a bad football team.
And then Jason Kelce retired.
They were a good offensive football team last year, but they were a horrible defensive team last year.
Nobody tell Mateo my choice. Pittsburgh Steelers, a line of 8.5 wins.
8.5 wins. That seems I guess they do win a lot of games every year, but they do it with negative point differential, and they can't keep getting away with it. So I'm gonna go under.
Jonathan Brooks is like, you love Jonathan Brooks, right?
I mean, I suppose.
I mean, at pick 106, do you love Jonathan Brooks?
I think that's probably lower than where I took him.
Just fell into my lap. There's nobody who I like after this. I got Rico Dowdle, and that's it.
You're going to make a pick on the Steelers?
I am an over and a lock for the over
Wow.
on
A
the Pittsburgh
lock?
Steelers.
I was thinking of making
This is like a
the
Russell Wilson bet or a Mike
under
Tomlin bet.
It is all of those things. It is the Steelers never lose these games, right? I mean, they have to get to 9 wins, right?
They never lose these games until they do.
But they haven't for so long, and they've done it with much worse rosters. And I think Russell Wilson is due for a comeback year. Like, this is going to be a cementing Russell Wilson season.
I hope that he has his Warren Moon in Minnesota season. I'm not counting on it happening. San
You're
Francisco, I'm an
also
under.
under?
Yeah, I'm an under.
Wow.
San Francisco 49ers, a line of 11 and a half wins.
I'll take the over. I think they'll still be pretty good. I guess that makes me over on everybody in this division except the Cardinals, but I think they can do it.
Under.
Yeah, I talked to myself from an under to an over, a very slight over. Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a line of 7.5 wins coming off last season's 9.
7.5? Wow.
It's every NFC South team. I'm like, it could be anything. Who knows?
Their line's 2 wins less than the Falcons.
Is correct.
And 2 wins
Okay.
less than they won last year, right? Or
One and a half less,
one
yes.
and a half
Yeah.
less.
It's not like I love them, but I think 7.5 is a little bit crazy. So I will take the over. Is this a Dave Canales thing, or I don't understand how it's so low? Yeah,
Like an anti-Dave Canales thing?
if they
No,
lost
like
him.
the loss of him is so big. You have to make a pick here.
Oh, I thought I went over.
Oh, okay. I am also over. Tennessee Titans, a line of 6.5 wins.
Okay, back to the AFC South.
Once more into
And
that breach.
yeah. Yeah, I guess Will Levis hasn't really shown much, and I don't have a ton of faith in the people he's throwing to either, so despite the coaching change and wanting them to succeed, I guess I will take the under, although not super confidently.
I am going under here.
I am also going under. Washington Commanders, also a line of 6.5 wins with Tristan's new quarterback, Jaden Daniels.
This is another team that had a horrible defense last year that, like, maybe you could think might get a little better by regression to the mean, but on the other hand, they have a lot of unknowns, so I will take the under.
I think Jane Daniels is going to play well, but they're also, I mean, we saw LSU a year ago be not that great of a team with Jaden Daniels winning the Heisman. So I'm going to go under on, yeah, I'm still going to go under on Washington.
Oh, you better. You've already taken 19 overs. I'm also under on this one. So there we go. 2024 NFL season.
How many
Either
overs did I have?
you were precisely 16.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
The
By
goal
far
is
the most
not
no.
necessarily to be perfect.
What?
It's not? No.
No, I think that's the goal.
It was like Bill Simmons and Cousin Sal and they do over-unders. Cousin Sal is like, if you don't add up every single game and all of your over-unders to be equal, then you're wrong. It's like, it's not about predicting. It's an overarching thing. You're trying to get, nobody is going to get a perfect score on over-unders. you're trying to, because they're not like 50-50, one happens or one doesn't, right? It's like 70-30 propositions. Does that make sense? That's why the money isn't equal on each side.
I mean, the money isn't equal on each side because they like to keep them at a half rather than changing them around.
And because people bet them in certain directions. So...
But I still don't know how that changes the goal to get all of them correct. Just because it's unrealistic, I mean, sure, doesn't mean that's not the goal.
Yes. All of them correct, but holding yourself so accountable to that goal shouldn't change your perspective about multiple teams.
I suppose so.
I'm thinking of whether I want any more locks, because all I have are the Cowboys. Did you guys have, what were your locks?
Cowboys and Seahawks. Three. Wait, where was my third? Oh, the
Houston over
Steelers?
Seahawks over. You have four, actually. Cowboys Houston over, Seahawks over, Pittsburgh over, and then our joint Dallas over lock. So fittingly for Tristan, all four of his locks are overs. I have Dallas over and Philadelphia under.
Was the Packers line 9.5?
Yes.
Okay, I'll take over for lock for that. And okay, just for fun, I'll take Steelers under lock.
Oh, wow. I don't know if we've ever had that
locks
before. Dueling locks. Let's go. Well, call us that one bridge in Paris, because we have dueling locks.
What? The Steelers need to get to 9 wins, right?
Yeah.
How many of the last?
All of them.
Okay.
Mike Tomlin's never had a losing season, right?
Until
so
now.
This is the year?
He did go 8-8 in 2019. He's never in 2013 and 2012. He has never had a losing season.
So Ben's betting on it now. You're betting against Russell Wilson.
/ Justin Fields.
The track record is what it is.
Of what?
Russell Wilson since he was in Seattle?
But the track record of Mike Tomlin is also what it is.
It is, yeah.
All things are what they are.
By definition, yes.
That's what we.
They have been outscored in 4 of the past 5 seasons, and yet have been better than 500 in 3 of those 4, and 500
honestly,
in the other.
Amazing.
Most importantly, I can't wait to watch the Seahawks play football.
Well, you have to wait a little bit, but football will start on Thursday, a game on Friday this year in Brazil, and then the Seahawks on Sunday against the Denver Broncos. So we're there.
That atmosphere being there was something about walking out. I really was not thinking about paying that much attention to the NFL, to college football, and aside from video games, of course, when I walked out up the stairs in 136, looked out over the field at Husky Stadium, it was beautiful out, 8 p.m., the sun was setting, it was the perfect temperature. We could not have been more back. And this Sunday at Lumen Field, 80 degrees, perfect weather, Seahawks and Ryan Grubb against the Denver Broncos and Bo Nix. We could not be more back. Bring it on.
Well, it's impossible to top that. On that note, thanks so much to Ben for joining us. And thank you for listening.
Thank you. Enjoy the season.
Okay, so I'm drafting in 52 minutes. Kevin said that, A, I'm not good enough to be able to draft and podcast at the same time, to which I say challenge accepted. I could add a third thing to that as well. But
this is like the George Costanza trifecta.
Yeah, I could at least eat a pastrami sandwich. I ended up with, in the Peltoncast 4X WNBA Champs League, I believe the exact same pick, right? Was I pick 10 in the Champions League?
It sounds reasonable.
The fix is in.
I fixed it without even knowing where you were drafting. I haven't the slightest clue, but I fixed it.
Okay, so pick 10. What is the game plan here? Nobody is in this league. Nobody's going to hear this until after it's out. What
I
did
mean,
you think about my strategy last week, Ben?
I haven't. I've only had one fantasy draft. It was an auction draft. So my
Where did you spend your money in the auction?
CeeDee Lamb, Chris Olave, Kyren Williams, and Jalen Hurts, and like garbage other than that. But I'm okay with that.
I am very anti Kyren Williams for some reason.
A lot of people are. I'm cautiously optimistic, but we'll see.
With pick 10 and 14, I mean, I can hope that Jonathan Taylor's still out there with that pick. You say Saquon is a do not, as a like, do not draft, Kevin. Saquon is a do not draft.
I think Saquon was a little overvalued. I don't know if I would say he's a do not draft.
Can you get like Garrett Wilson? Does he last till 10th pick?
No, Garrett Wilson will be there, but I want to go running back.
Okay.
Because there's so many receivers later that I want to take. Who is the other dude? Rashee Rice was the one that I want to make sure I get.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was going to get him for cheap, but I guess that's everybody knows that he's good now and not getting thrown in jail or something.
I want to make sure that I get Rashee Rice and Keon Coleman are the two.
Kevin and I are in a draft together tomorrow, so I guess we can't like talk that much about strategy.
Right.
I mean, it's specifically about pick 10.
Yeah.
Like, game planning that pick. I feel like there's a chance. Do you think it would be a bad idea drafting not necessarily the same two players, but one of the same players again?
I don't like to do it as much at the top because, like, this is my logic why I only have Caitlin Clark on one of my two WNBA fantasy teams. He's like, in the event she wasn't good, like, then just,
yeah,
your season's
yeah,
over.
Yep.
Hope you had fun. Now, in hindsight, I kind of wish I had her on both teams, although Arike Ogunbowale worked out quite well on my team, and I'm in the championship in both leagues. But, you know, that was my logic. I'm more willing to do it in, like, the seventh round because, you know, if someone down there doesn't hit, like, oh, well, such is life. Saquon is 10th in my projections.
Overall, or among running backs?
Oh, but I didn't. Oh, you know, I didn't change it from half PPR. Hold on. You expecting me to keep all of this in here?
No, we don't have to. But okay, my hope is that Jonathan Taylor is out there with pick 10. And then I do.
Yeah, I think
Jonathan...
that's a good hope. He's 6th. Yeah.
I think I do Jonathan Taylor and then try to do Saquon or Jahmyr Gibbs. If Taylor's gone, maybe I do Saquon and Jahmyr Gibbs with the other pick.
I think that's a pretty good strategy.
I got Gibbs, so it's not necessarily tying my like wagon to Gibbs and ETN again, but still one of them. Okay, well, we'll see how that plays out. Marvin Harrison at pick 22 is really bold. That's very aggressive.
I agree.